Welcome to the KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast Series, delivering fresh insights and perspectives around major accounting and financial reporting developments across a range of timely topics. We thank you for joining today.
Welcome to today's podcast. This is our top five ESG messages as we head into the year end. My name is Julie Santoro, and I'm a partner in our Department of Professional Practice. And I'm very happy today to be joined by Mara Hodge, our KPMG Impact Audit Leader.
Thanks for having me today, Julie. I know some of you are probably feeling anxiety about ESG reporting as year end quickly approaches. There are many mixed messages out there, so we're here to help you prepare and give you the confidence you need to enter this reporting season.
Before we begin, we need to provide a disclaimer. We are going to use a lot of acronyms on the podcast today. So if you're not familiar or you feel like you need a refresher, you'll find a quick reference guide on our website. So with that out of the way, it's back to Mara for number one, the International Sustainability Standards Board.
Well, if you live a life steeped in ESG reporting like I do, one of the more exciting happenings this year was the IFRS Foundation's three announcements at COP26 back in early November. First, the formation of the ISSB. Second, the merger of the Value Reporting Foundation and CDSB into the IFRS Foundation. And third, the release of disclosure and climate prototypes that had been developed in collaboration between the CDSB, the IASB board, the TCFD, the VRF, and the WEF, all supported by IOSCO. That was a mouthful, but the reason I'm excited by these announcements was really just the sheer speed at which they occurred. While we had anticipated the ISSB to be set up in 2021, the announcement of the merger of the Value Reporting Foundation, which houses the SASB standards and the Integrated Reporting Framework, and the CDSB, which is an initiative of CDP, all into the IFRS Foundation, was a big step towards convergence, and we did not anticipate that happening so quickly. In addition, the release of the prototypes means that all of the voluntary standard setters and frameworks that are out there focused on financial materiality for an investor community have actually come together and begun that convergence process in making their recommendations. I'm also excited about the vision of the ISSB. Their goal is to develop a global baseline of disclosure standards that are interoperable with jurisdictional requirements. What does that mean? Well, it means that everyone can follow one set of standards, and then jurisdictions like the United States or the European Union can layer on top of that things that are applicable specifically to their market. So for instance, the EU Green Deal and the EU taxonomy can work in tandem with the global baseline. Now, the absence of explicit mention of the SEC in the development of the prototypes may have raised some questions for you as to the relevance of it to the US market. We hear IFRS and IASB and maybe tend to tune out. But what I want to note is that the anticipated rules from the SEC are inspired by the same frameworks and standards that were built into these prototypes. And in particular, the TCFD framework underpins climate reporting in the climate prototype. And Chair Gensler asked the staff to learn from and be inspired by external standard setting, including TCFD. So there's clearly going to be some overlap there. Secondly, and maybe more importantly, there is strong market demand for this information. Regardless of regulation, physical location, whether you're a public or a private company, everyone is coming under pressure from investors, lenders, customers, and suppliers to make their business operations more sustainable and then ultimately improve their reporting around it. So as a result, I believe that a global baseline standard will become a de facto requirement, even if the regulators don't fully adopt it. And that's reason enough for you to pay attention. Now let's move back to Julie for number two, climate risk and the financial statements.
Coming out of COP26, transition risk is top of mind. And by that, I mean the risks arising from a transition to a low carbon economy. Those risks manifest themselves in many different ways. It might be regulation requiring reduced emissions. It might be shifting patterns in demand as customers want to buy products with a lower carbon footprint. And another example is the diminishing availability of capital to businesses with high emissions. And with all the risks, let's not forget the opportunities such as innovation and R&D and the new markets that are going to open up for products and services that meet this demand. Very close to home, on December 8, we saw President Biden sign an executive order demonstrating how the US will leverage its scale and procurement power by reducing emissions across federal operations, investing in American clean energy industries and manufacturing, for example. So all of this shows us the sheer magnitude of what will happen as we transition to a low carbon world, to a low carbon economy. And a lot of you will be thinking about what this transition risk means for your company, for your business model and for your strategy. But I really want you to ask yourself another question. And that is, have you done any work to think about the impact of climate risk on your financial statements? And when I ask that question, I'm not just thinking about transition risk, I'm including physical risks. So how at risk are you for flooding, hurricanes, wildfires, etc.? Do you really understand where the pressure points in your business are? Because the feedback that we are hearing is that more work needs to be done. As your intentions for transitioning change to strategies and then to actions, the potential effects on your financial statements increase. And it's really not just about what your company has committed to do and your plans and your actions coming from that. You've really got to look at this 360 degrees. So your customers, your suppliers, your investors, lenders, the list goes on. And once you do that, yes, there are questions about the useful lives of your property, plant and equipment, potential impairments, possible contingent liabilities, but you really have to think way beyond that. What about contracts with clauses that allow modifications? What about negotiations for contract renewals where customers are looking for something slightly different than what you've given them before? Executive compensation with ESG targets in it. And with all this innovation, these digital transformation projects with new products and services kind of on the horizon, what about the costs of all that innovation? Do you know how it has to be accounted for? So what we'd like you to do is have a look at our handbook on climate risk. Start with the executive summary. It's there to help you analyze the potential effects on your financial statements. Ask yourselves the questions that we pose in this publication. Create your own checklist and from there monitor your environment and your circumstances. So that is number two, climate risk in the financial statements. For number three, it's back to Mara and climate competence.
Well, Julie, what I can tell you is that every client conversation I have today starts out around the resources needed for ESG reporting and the extent of climate competence needed within the organization. But before I answer their question, I think it's important to take a step back and really understand that different depths of knowledge and understanding are required, depending on what you're responsible for. So to maybe explain that a little bit better, let's walk through the components of a net zero commitment. First, what you're saying when you make a net zero commitment is that you have calculated your current emissions and that you will reduce those emissions as low as possible and then offset the remainder by a set time in the future. This is the reporting component of the commitment. However, in order to actually achieve net zero, there has to be a set of defined actions that the organization can undertake. And this is the strategy part. Then the initiatives identified have to be executed. So this is where operationalization and business transformation come into play. And I think that if you break it into those three parts, you can see that while you might be able to have one person with deep climate competence who orchestrates and oversees all of this work and sets the strategy, everyone else in the organization who does reporting or creates policy or operationalizes that strategy they have to play their part, but they might not need the same depth of knowledge around climate. Now, in addition to existing sustainability departments, what we're starting to see companies create are an ESG controller position. So this goes back to the original question of what resources do I need and how much climate competence do they need? So this ESG controller position, we're often seeing may be responsible for ensuring the application and determination of greenhouse gas accounting policies, oversight of system implementation, the development of process and controls around ESG data, climate disclosures, and various other accounting and controllership type responsibilities, all through the ESG lens. So you may be able to take a finance person and get them the ESG training that they need, or take a sustainability person and get them the finance training that they need. But there's definitely going to be some overlap and need to integrate those skills together. The last thing that I would note is that it is absolutely critical to have champions in executive leadership. Their role is to remove roadblocks and allocate capital to help you achieve your goals. So whether formally or informally focused on ESG, your success is dependent on both support at the top of the organization and getting engagement by all departments and divisions in order to add up to measurable change. With that, let's move to number four and talk about SEC scrutiny.
So message number four is that you should absolutely expect SEC scrutiny of your ESG disclosures in filings, specifically around climate. As we stand here today, we are waiting for proposed regulation from the SEC, and that is expected now to drop early 2022. However, in September 2021, the SEC published a sample of a comment letter that was being sent to companies, and that asked very detailed probing questions, and it did that without any new regulation. So these questions were based on the 2010 guidance that was issued by the SEC, and here I'll tell you some of the things that it was asking about, very incredibly detailed. So it was looking at the differences between companies' ESG and sustainability reports and their filings. It was looking at the specific disclosures in the risk factors and MD&A sections of a company's 10K. How did that stack up about against what had been disclosed elsewhere? It was looking at the material effects on a company of transitioning to a low carbon economy. So like market trends, technological changes. It was asking about the physical effects of climate change, such as floods and hurricanes, and also about the indirect consequences of climate-related regulation or business trends. And then it was asking about the material increased compliance costs related to climate change and wanted those to be quantified. It was asking for disclosures about the purchase or sale of carbon credits or offsets. It also asked about pending or existing climate-related legislation, regulations, international accords, that and how that would affect the company, and any past and or future capex for climate-related projects. So you can see those are incredibly detailed questions that were being asked. So in December at the AICPA CEMA conference, the Division of Corporation Finance spoke about this sample letter and the questions they were asking. And they emphasize really that issuers should take notice of this and take those questions that are being asked, they should take them into account in their current year filings and really think about it. They emphasize to everybody that they are referring back to the old 2010 guidance on climate disclosures. So really saying that, hey, you need to take account of this without us needing any new regulation.
I know we have provided you a lot of information already today, and my four E's are really just key next steps that you can take in order to help prepare for what's to come. We don't have exact rules and standards yet that you can follow, but these four steps will help you get ready. So first, educate yourself and your organization. obtain an understanding of the commitments that you've made, whether that's a net zero commitment or a diversity commitment. Learn about your current external and internal reporting and who has historically been responsible for this reporting. Second, establish a board-led governance structure. It is critical that every part of the organization is at the table when making decisions about commitments, investments, and reporting on ESG. Historically, though, and you probably won't be surprised by this, we have not seen finance at the table in these discussions. But we know that their perspective is going to be invaluable as these reporting requirements become more formalized. Third, engage with your current process owners. Many companies are already doing some form of reporting or have sustainability initiatives going on. And so it's important to understand what your current state is and what they're currently doing. One of the benefits is then that you don't have to start from scratch, but you can also identify current gaps and think about how you'll be able to enhance and improve what you already have in light of the standards that are to come. And lastly, explore your options. You want to try to create efficiencies. More often than not, when we're working with our clients, we observe that there are a lot of redundancies and inefficiencies simply because the data gatherers don't have insights into how they can better collect the information they're being asked to provide. So finance and internal audit often have that perspective to be able to leverage existing systems and controls, or even better yet, if you're going through a digital transformation and implementing new financial reporting systems, consider ways that you can incorporate sustainability information automatically within there. One good example is just capturing kilowatt hour data from electricity invoices in addition to the cost from that invoice. To wrap up, just remember, educate, establish, engage, and explore. If you begin with these four steps, they'll set you up for success in the future.
Thanks, Mara. Before we leave today's podcast, just a quick reminder on what those top five issues were that we discussed. Number one, the International Sustainability Standards Board, that positive news. Number two, have a look at the potential effects of climate risk on your financial statements. Number three, climate competence in your organization, the different levels, the different types of competence and how they all work together. Number four, absolutely expect SEC scrutiny of your ESG disclosures in filings specifically around climate. And lastly, number five, the four E's to prepare for future success. Educate, establish, engage, explore. So remember, you can find more resources on today's topics, including the quick reference guide to ESG acronyms and much, much more on our website at frv.kpmg.us. Thanks to everybody who's listening to the podcast. That's goodbye from us.
Thank you for listening to this KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast. For more in-depth financial reporting developments, analysis, and podcast episodes, please visit frv.kpmg.us and be sure to subscribe today. Also, we're social. You can also follow us on LinkedIn at KPMG Financial Reporting View or with hashtag KPMGFRV.